are back with episode 776 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Gary from Jacksonville. And who else?
Just you. Yeah.
You count too, John.
I do count, but yeah. Okay. Not as much as I wish we had other co-hosts as well here, just because I missed the sound of their voice.
Yes, I agree. There we go.
Yes, well, we are going to be getting into, as we have said before, some other big topics here, as we've had a few nice news items come out this past week, but then we are going to get into the bottom and top shows of the week probably before this hour is out, or at least part of an hour. We don't quite do an hour anymore, but at any rate, before we do any of that, actually... Gary, if you could do a disclaimer of sorts.
Yes, absolutely. As we discuss both news stories and show reviews, we don't hold back. We give you guys about a week to watch what we're talking about. And after that, all's fair in love and reviews. So we will talk about who lives, who dies, and what happens in the storyline. So if you haven't caught up with these shows, put us on pause, check them out. Or if you do like you're the type of person who does like to be spoiled, we'll take care of that for you.
We certainly will. So, okay, the first topic that we're going to talk about here is, again, a little bit of speculation, but also a little bit of criticism, perhaps. There is news that Fox has, in fact, ordered a pilot for an X-Men television series.
Okay, now this isn't that Legion one, is it?
No, it is not.
Okay.
And that's actually a point that I wanted to make, because this has been long in speculation that they could be doing this. But there is a lot of discussion out there already about, well, wait, where does this fit? Because, you know, we've got the X-Men movies, we've got shows like Legion, like you just mentioned, and now we have a television series that is going to be coming out on Fox. Now, is this an interconnected universe, similar to what they at least say on paper the MCU is, with, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Netflix shows? Or is this something else? Is this some kind of, you know, variation on several different... versions of the universe, similar to what the DC TV landscape is like?
Mm.
Well, it sounds like they're going more the DC route. And that's the first thing that I wanted to kind of throw out there, is that, you know, I don't know how much I like that. Although, on the other hand, I can say that given the status of the X-Men film franchise, I don't know if it's actually the smartest move to do it that way, because... Well, the X-Men films are in this weird quasi-timeline as it is, where the original movies are in one timeline, and then they supposedly rebooted the timeline between First Class and Days of Future Past, but the details don't quite add up for them to have been in the same timeline, because it was somewhat of a reboot. And then you've got... now, you also have Logan, which is coming out very shortly, and by all accounts, it's not necessarily in the... 100% in any of the X-Men timelines, even though it does allude to past events.
Well, the comic book that the Logan show is based on is Old Man Logan, and that's already considered to be kind of an alternate universe. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily put it in the movies. And I think you even have a hard time sort of putting all the movies together, even
right.
In some cases. But, you know, John, that's not the first thing that occurred to me with this. The first thing that occurred to me is Fox needs to hold on to the X-Men license. And is this a way that they're able to do that?
Ooh, that's
does this count?
Point.
I mean, I know they've been doing movies, and I'm not sure what the details of their agreements with, you know, that they made with Marvel when Marvel was selling off every property to try and stave off bankruptcy, as hard as that is to believe now. At one point, they were very close to bankruptcy, so they licensed almost everything they can, and we're dealing with the repercussions of that, you know, with X-Men, with Fantastic Four, and with Spider-Man, as they've had to, you know, really had to fight, in a sense, to try and get these characters back into the corporate folds. And I wonder, does a TV show fulfill their development requirements? Maybe they'll order the pilot and, quote, release it as a movie, and that buys them another year or two?
You know, you never quite know if they are thinking about coming out of Apocalypse. And, you know, there were all these rumors that Apocalypse, even though it made money, and actually made plenty of money, it didn't make enough money for their... happiness, and that they were thinking of yet another reboot of the X-Men film franchise, as if First Class wasn't enough of one, that maybe they're thinking, we need to take some time to figure out how to redo this, and so this TV series might give them that time, like you're saying. On the other hand, it could be that they've had the movie rights, and maybe that's allowed them to stave off any challenge as far as television rights are concerned, but that could be why you have shows like Legion and this coming out all of a sudden, is that it's not it's not simply that they want to expand, although they do, because they keep talking about, okay, they're going to have a New Mutants movie, they're going to have possibly an X-Force movie, and so on and so forth. And Gambit's been sitting out there for, what, 5 years now?
On and off.
Yeah, it's complicated. All this licensing stuff is definitely complicated. It just occurs to me, like, okay, that's great, that maybe that's all that it is that the reason that they keep doing this, they keep, I don't even know how to say it, just undermining the cohesiveness of their movie franchise, is because for them it's just a matter of, we just need another installment, let's just find something that makes sense and let Bryan Singer do his thing. And Singer seems to have this attitude of, it doesn't need to interconnect, as long as it's just a story that's worth telling. We'll tell it however we need to, and we'll kind of pretend that it all adds up, but we're not really going to put the effort in to make sure that it does.
Or we'll just keep releasing stuff, and hopefully at some point it'll be good.
Well, I got to say, like, why did Legion have to be disconnected from the films? It doesn't make sense for it to be so, or for it to need to be so. There's nothing about it that explicitly says you have to have people from the films in there, or you have to link it in any major way. But to say that it's in the X-Men universe, which they kind of do, from what I understand, reading some reviews of the pilot, for instance, it's very clear to them that it's like, no, this is in the X-Men universe. Well, then how hard is it simply to find little ways to tie it in? Maybe because it's already so complicated in the movie timelines that they can't even figure out how to make that consistent, so they're not going to make it more difficult. But then if you have an X-Men TV series, what everyone's going to be wondering is this just another restart? How many different versions of the story are you going to ask us to follow when you have the same cast members all the time? That's the thing that gets me. It's like, okay, I can understand. Oh, you know what? We're not going to bother saying that, you know, another Wolverine movie is going to be part of the overall universe. It's just going to kind of be its own thing. And yet you have Patrick Stewart in it. So you're explicitly tying it to the other movies because you cast him explicitly to be Charles Xavier. So what's the point of that? You're kind of speaking out of both sides of your mouth on that, you know, when you're the Fox executives at this point, or even Bryan Singer for that matter. So it's just really strange to me. It's like, okay, we're expanding the X-Men franchise, but are we really, or are we creating just all these separate franchises? With the same license.
Well, you know, as nice, and I don't necessarily want to say a gimmick, but you know, as nice as it is that all these Marvel shows somewhat dovetail into each other, and while you want to say they do, often, you know, our dovetailing that we're talking about isn't more than a sentence, maybe two, that's a throwaway reference that either show could live without perfectly fine and move forward in most cases. So I'd rather actually not see them shackled by that. It's nice when you can develop that bigger universe, but if they can tell a better quality story by not linking in, I'm fine with that. It's never been a deal breaker for me.
I guess the question is, like I said, if they are basically giving you visual and character-driven clues, like okay, so for instance, if they had in the MCU, if they basically said, you know what, the stuff that's going on in, you know, Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, that's all in its own separate little world. But then they had somebody come in and who is, like, say, the Morgan Freeman character, the Martin Freeman character from, wow, very different.
Yeah.
Extremely different. Martin Freeman character from Civil War shows up in Defenders. And he's the same character. But then they come back and they say, no, they're completely separate. You'd be sitting there going, why even have the same guy play the same character? Doesn't make sense. Right? Where right now, all they have to do to keep it quote-unquote in-universe is they make a few stray references to the, you know, Attack on New York every so often, and they just don't do anything major to contradict anything else that's been established. They do their own thing, but they do it in their own little corner, and it just fleshes out that corner without any real difficulty. Same thing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ties into things, but it never has really done anything that contradicts the films. If anything, they kind of go out of their way to link up more often than not with the minor details from the films. And actually, there's been, you know, some pretty cool things, like when it tied into Winter Soldier. That was a really cool extension of what had happened in Winter Soldier.
Yes.
There's even been, you know, the stuff with the Inhumans is really tied in nicely with the with Civil War and Age of Ultron. So you've got all of that going on, and I think that it works out fine because you're only making, basically, like you said, they're only really making, you know, minor references here and there, but at the same time, the real work is don't do anything that contradicts what you've already put in place. But that's where I feel like the X-Men movies have gone out of their way to contradict each other. And I don't know if it's just that the writers don't really think that anyone cares or something, but it's like, no, wait. You're courting some of the most continuity-minded comic book fans ever, considering the fact that one of the biggest draws of the X-Men universe for at least a good chunk of years was how well Claremont would just riff off of all these little inconsistencies that he wrote and make it into major story points.
Yeah. Well, you know, that being said, I mean, the X-Men is probably, I think, is more guilty of this than just about any other Marvel movie series, in that they take one of the better existing stories that have been done in the comic books for that group over the years, and then put some drastic skew on it.
Oh, yeah.
For example, having Days of Future Past, and they completely wrote out the Kitty Pryde character.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're supposed to have this sort of play of the young child versus the mature woman, and, you know, the comic book plays off that to a fair extent, and her sadness and why she's trying to, you know, stop this. And then they completely write that character out and make it a Wolverine vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a big stretch of continuity issue for me. And, you know, and so, but then they keep doing it. Even with, you know, with Phoenix, they rewrote her whole thing. They said, oh, here's an idea. And then they kind of gut part of it. And I think it was for who's ever directing it is they're literally just, you know, picking a little storyline out of the various comic book series and trying to make it work. Where with the actual Marvel proper movies, might not be the right word, but, you know, they actually go through, I feel, extra detail to make it work with what happened in the storyline. You know, as crazy as Winter Soldier's origin is, you know, they went that extra mile to really sell it, to sell that new difference, where I don't feel when these differences come up with, like, you know, Fox or Fantastic Four.
Yeah, but we don't have to go over that again.
But I'm just saying, but they don't bother to try and sell it.
Yeah, it's as much as I don't mind Apocalypse, I was a huge fan of that original arc in X-Factor back in the day.
Yes, it was tremendous. You know,
it was amazing, right? Yeah. And for them to basically soft sell it and really change up, it's like they gave you that great taste of it, and then they changed it up completely in the film. So it's like, yeah, it's fine in the film. It doesn't necessarily go against what you've had before in the films. But at the same time, like you said, they took this really great story arc and mushed it.
Yeah. So, you know, and as they're talking about the show, they say it's going to be much more intimate than the movies are. And I'm hoping they mean, you know, characters speaking to each other, that kind of development, and not some sort of skin show. But one thing that does make me, at least is promising for me, is the fact that Matt Nix is involved, and I always enjoyed Burn Notice as a guilty pleasure. So, you know, given his run with that, I have tentative hopes.
I just now, I'm thinking of the opening credits done in Burn Notice yes. style, where you have yes. one of the characters like, you know, I am Logan, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. See how well it works? Anyway, yes. And while they said that there will be familiar X-Men characters in it, I don't actually hear them say X-Men. You know, so I'm hoping we don't have a show about Moira McTaggart. anyone else we can think of that is not directly.
Okay. So what I'm wondering is, okay, all right, so. And let's not even go into the fact that Deadpool supposedly happens right in the X-Men universe, yet they will never have Deadpool in the X-Men movies, even though things are happening anyway. So I'm thinking what's going to happen is this is going to be kind of like the characters that you see walking around in the school while the main team is off, perhaps? I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, are they going to try? They're not going to have, like, a Cyclops, I would think, or Jean Grey or anything like that. So, yeah, how are they doing this? And Singer is involved again, right? So
yes, Singer is. I don't know. I'm trying to think. What was they, did they actually
producing? Maybe or
directing it.
Okay. So he's directing the pilot. So he's involved. So I don't know. Is he going to make the effort to try and make at least some? I don't know. This is just that's exactly the thing. Like if they basically said, oh, we're make like when they're making the Inhumans for on ABC. One of the biggest kind of things that they initially people thought that they said they were going to do was to not tie it into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and people went nuts. And then they had to clarify, no, that's not at all what we're saying. Or even like Agent Carter. They made a lot of effort to make sure that it was going to work with everything else. This is what I think people expect. So if there's an X-Men show and it just is completely different than what we've seen before, and it doesn't even explain why we don't see these other characters, I think that people are going to be disappointed.
Mm.
I think you have to have some connection, especially if you put up familiar names of like, oh, these are the same people that are involved in the movie franchise. Oh, yeah, but they decided to put out a TV show that has nothing to do with what they've been doing before. And there'll probably be a cameo of a character that you're familiar with, but nope, it's not the same one.
We'll see some blue hair left somewhere. Yeah, or things. But when I first saw this X-Men TV show, I was actually hoping it would have been like a New Mutant show with all the fads for, young adults or into to at least being portrayed and up and through their 20s and stuff. I thought that would have been a slam dunk for them. But no such luck there. So I'll just have to send my proposal to someone to back to the CW again and cross my fingers.
We'll have to see.
I wish there was more really to go on. The only other little crumb that they do throw to us is that it won't. The whole show is not going to be just about people inside, meaning it's not just going to be like people who know the X-Men or are familiar with them. It's going to be the outside perspective looking at the X-Men. Are they heroes or a force for good, evil, or just some chaotic group? And so maybe we'll get some more insight looking at them from the outside. So that's the only other sort of teaser they threw at us so far.
Yeah, I don't want to be relentlessly negative about this, although I have my concerns, because one thing that kind of blows my mind here is that you remember back when the original X-Men film came out, and we were all, even with the flaws that were there, just the idea that the X-Men were on the big screen. They realized the X-Men. Like, we have a Cyclops, we have a Jean Grey, we have Storm. Oh my God, like, that was amazing at the time.
Yes.
Now to think that it is so normal for this kind of stuff to be out there, but there is now the ability, and I think they could actually pull out, they can do a really good X-Men on the television scale. I mean, before we were just amazed that they did a superhero movie right, or at least mostly right for once, and now we have, now the X-Men are going to be on TV, and it's almost like, really? Are they going to do it right? Because they've been doing all this amazing stuff. it's almost old hat now. We have this huge DCW thing that I think has spoiled us in that regard. So I just hope it lives up to that. I hope that they can do as good a show with the X-Men as we have with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I think is doing, even though it is clearly not getting the support that it used to back when they thought it was going to be a massive hit in the first season, I think they do a lot with what they have. And I think that they could do an amazing job with an X-Men television series. And I'm really interested in seeing them do some of this stuff on the television scale. I just hope that it doesn't get so bogged down in being something that nobody really asked for, I guess. But we'll see. I'm going to try and maintain. Who am I kidding? As soon as it's on the air, I'm going to be tuning in. So I'm not even going to pretend that it's otherwise. All right, we do have a little bit of time left in this particular segment, and I guess we should do what we probably don't want to have to do, and that is go to a short discussion on our In Memoriam section. Mm. And we did have yet another big name pass this past week, and that would be John Hurt. And he died at the age of 77 from pancreatic cancer, unfortunately. He was diagnosed back in June of 2015, so actually that is a pretty long time to go with that kind of diagnosis, so good for him for hanging on as long as he did, I guess. But, of course, people who watch genre television are probably most familiar with him in recent years in his portrayal of the War Doctor.
Mm.
He only really portrayed that role once, kind of reprised in a repeat fashion, I believe, in a recent episode last year. But I don't think he actually filmed anything new. I think it was just his material from which one was that? The Time of the Doctor, I believe it was, or Day of the Doctor.
I think it was Day. Yeah.
But yes, he was the War Doctor. Did a bang up job as that, and of course we all know him from the Harry Potter franchise as Ollivander, and he was the dragon, or voiced the dragon on Merlin. As many people are big fans of that show, we're passing that memory around. Of course, we can't forget that he was very memorably a star in Alien.
That's where I was first introduced to him, yes.
Yes. He really burst upon the scene for us.
Yeah, he really really put his acting skills out there for us, yes.
Yes. But of course, he was in a ton of other things. He definitely had a huge resume. I mean, I do remember, it says in this particular article we're looking at, but one of the first things that I saw him in was The Elephant Man from David Lynch. That kind of now, it was a very well-received black and white film from back in, I believe that was 79 or 80.
80, yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, it's that was a big time. I mean, Alien came out right around then. He had a big role in The Elephant Man and then Midnight Express around that same time. So definitely, though, he was in a ton of things. It seemed like he would come up in just about everything sooner or later. So he was in Snowpiercer, for instance, which was a fairly well-regarded movie in recent years. I mean, I could just go through this, and there's just a ton of different things that he's been in. You know, Hellboy, he was in that. He was,
Indiana Jones.
Yes, exactly. I, Claudius, of course, he was Caligula. But he did a lot of voice work. So, yep, he was in Watership Down. I was going to say, that was one that suddenly comes to mind when I mentioned voice work. So, yes, he was in the original Lord of the Rings animated film back in the day. So, yes, he was in a lot of genre stuff. As I said, we could just keep going and going. But, yeah, he is definitely going to be missed. And I know a lot of people that are still reeling from him being from him passing, especially if those who are in the fandom. So...
He was even knighted, so. He was even knighted by Queen Elizabeth in 2015. So, while he may not have won an Oscar, I will give a knighthood above to be above an Oscar in my book. So.
Yeah, he did get plenty of nominations, though.
Yes.
So, yes. All right. So, yeah, I don't want to dwell too much on that other than to say that he will be sorely missed. He was definitely a fixture in a lot of different films and other aspects of the genre over the years. All right. What we're going to do is have our mid-show break. And when we come back, we are going to get into the initial episodic discussion. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. right, and we are back, as I said, for the episodic discussion for the week, and there's quite a bit here, so we're going to go ahead and get started. There were 17 episodes in this particular week, spread across an equal number of shows, so we shall see which ones we actually get to in terms of anything outside of the top and the bottom. But we have some interesting choices at the top again this week. I should say that all of the episodes were average or above, so nothing that was dipping down below a 7, which is actually kind of nice after a few weeks where we had some real turkeys, it seemed. But everything here was at least average. There wasn't anything that was quote-unquote horrible. So we're going to go ahead and start with our bottom three. And the first episode that we can talk about here, getting an average of 7.25, is The Librarian, Season 3, Episode 10, and The Wrath of Chaos. Dosa and Apep infiltrate the library as the librarian's two-front battle comes to a climax. Here, the librarians must put aside their differences to save the library themselves and the world. So this was the third season finale. And I guess we should point out at this point that it has, in fact, been renewed for a season 4.
Woohoo! Woohoo!
Yes. That said, this particular finale, not the best one that they've had. Gary, your thoughts on this, because I have a few myself.
Well, first off, they dashed my entire hopes. There Flynn was, seconds from death, only to be saved.
Yes. Actually, I thought of that. Yes, as you said.
I said to myself, oh, great, they're setting up season 4. It's going to be wonderful. You know, Wiley must have finished out his contract. No. I suppose I shouldn't be that enthusiastic over a character not dying. But nevertheless, I've had issues with the character and continue to have issues with the character and his relationship with Eve that just sort of gives me the creeps. And I don't think I will ever get used to it. Anyway, I enjoyed the – geez, it was more than wink and a nod, John. The homage to Warehouse 13. That was so blatantly obvious with Dosa's warehouse that they were being that all the artifacts were being moved to, and I could only chuckle pretty hysterically over that. Oh, they're using science to instead of magic. Oh, anyway, I still felt it was respectfully done and not done to mock. So I enjoyed that a great deal. Eve and Flynn's plan sort of caught me off guard, but. That they were actually working together, but I never believed that Eve had turned on the library, so I thought it was something of her own devising, and instead Flynn got co-credit. That being said, I thought the special effects were kind of enjoyable. I enjoyed how they pulled so many things from other episodes that obviously the writers were writing up to this. Cassandra's new abilities, Jake's tattoo power, and I thought that was the way that, and the love potion that was pulled back. I thought those were all nice nods to earlier in the seasons and how all these things sort of added up to help defeat the villain. I thought that was a really nice touch. The them having to answer the questions wrong to get Jenkins out of his cage, I thought was cute, even if it didn't really make sense. But I still thought it was a cute little story device. There was just a lot of nice things about this. As I said, though, Flynn not dying really pulled it down for me, and the resolution seemed very odd. That you can't handle this stuff. Just look at you. Oh, okay, we'll ship it all back. That seemed a little. Lame to me, and honestly, it sort of reset most of the whole season at the end, and I didn't like that. So now we have to look forward to a new season 4 villain. My only thought is that they wrote this to really be a series finale, and now it's not.
Really felt that way, didn't it?
Yeah, sure
like
did.
Like they weren't expecting, or they just wanted to leave a little bit of a door open for like even a film instead. Or, like a TV movie, and it's like, oh, no, you get a fourth season there, and I'm sure they'll be fine coming up with something, but it did feel like they were wrapping it up. And, yeah, I guess I agree with you as far as Flynn is concerned, not just because I also find him tedious after a while, like about 15 seconds, but more along the lines of... they spent a lot of time setting up his sacrifice. And if it was, and the fact that it was just all for nothing, really. I mean, like, oh, no, it's just a clever thing where we're going to get you to think that he's going to die, but no, we're going to, you know, keep him around after all. It's like, okay, but you wasted so much time setting up his big exit.
Yeah, two commercial breaks to do it. Really? Two? Yeah.
So a huge chunk of it. And it's like, okay, but then you glossed over things, as you said, like the whole Dosa thing. That really never came to anything. And even the APEP thing seemed awfully easily resolved. And it didn't even have some of those, you know, big moments that have seen in the previous seasons as far as bringing everything to a conclusion. It just seemed like, no, they wanted to play with the audience. They wanted you to think, oh, we're going to get rid of somebody major. It's going to be Flynn. This is going to be why, you know, we had that episode earlier where he was thinking, you know, they had the intervention with him and how he had to admit that, you know, oh, I haven't been trusting the team so much and I've been, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's like, oh, it's going to all come together with him sacrificing himself and now there's going to be, you know, his legacy instead. But, nope. We just wanted to have an episode where we teased you with the idea because that's just how important he is to everything.
I know.
Can we have the metaphor of how the parent has to go for the kids to,
thrive? Yeah, right? They have to be out on their own. And
you've even been letting the kids thrive. I mean, Cassandra had a big episode. You've had a few big things happen for the new team. But then you had this whole thing with Flynn again. It's frustrating because this could have been a much more well-conceived finale, and it just seems like they kind of dropped the ball on it.
Kind of.
Yeah. And it's not horrible, it's just that it had more potential. So it was a bit of an average episode for that reason. All right, let's go ahead then and move on to another episode that also came in at a 7.25 for this week, and is also the 10th episode of the third season, and that is The Flash, Season 3, Episode 10, Borrowing Problems from the Future. Barry is tormented by his vision of the future when Iris is murdered by Savitar. When a criminal named Plunder shows up in Central City, Barry recalls the villain's presence in his vision of the future and fears that if he catches Plunder, it will cement Iris's fate. If it were only that straightforward. Yeah, this episode, like I said, also getting a 7.25. And for me, I mean, they came back after a hiatus, and this felt like half an episode stretched into a full episode. I really felt like it was transitional in many respects. I liked the stuff with HR. This was probably the most likable that he's been. He's really starting to grow into his place. They're just letting him do it. They're making him do it step by step, which is kind of strong character work for this show lately. So it's surprising to me that then this show also had the same callback to Iris dying, what, four times?
One, two, three. Are you including his dream at the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah, four times, yeah.
Four times. The same thing. And then there was that total nonsensical conversation in the middle of the episode where it's like, so do you think the future can change? I'm sorry, have you been watching the same show I have?
Yeah.
Barry?
Yeah, the domino scene? Yeah.
What, Flashpoint?
Yeah, haven't you figured, you've how many times? What, twice? Three times? What, how many times have you done it now, Barry? I said.
But that's not the future. Well, the people in the past, it would be the future for them, and you clearly changed their future, so... Yeah, the future can change. Why are we having this conversation?
Well, I think they are doing it, though, John. All things said and done, that's exactly what they're doing. They've already laid out, I think, I'm guessing, probably about five episodes with that scene.
Yeah.
No. Hear me out for a second.
Go ahead.
Sorry, do you mind if I interrupt?
No, please do.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The key is seeing what are they calling him now? The character in Star Labs, the guy?
HR,
yes. HR. The key was him with the rifle. Whose rifle? Plunder's rifle. Step one. They're gonna build a whole team to stop him. That's what I think, to stop Savitar from killing Iris.
Okay.
See, because HR wasn't there before. Now they took out Plunder. HR has his gun. I think there's going to be several more steps along the way, and I think you will eventually see every single person in Team Flash at that scene. Or at least most of them.
I don't mind
now
that
the,
they're
now the next one is a Vibe, doing combating somebody.
All right.
Right to like, I saw the preview saying something to like to the death or something like that.
Maybe,
and he's, and you see Barry having him practice his powers to hit things. I think they've laid it all out. Yeah, but I think they've laid it all out, and so I think they are going to change time, only a different, you know, only like just you know with just with the foreknowledge, not so much going to that time and making the change, but changing the setup leading up to it.
I don't necessarily mind the idea that, okay, there's this future event and we're going to do whatever we can to avoid it. And they have to play with the, like, okay, we're constantly checking to see what happens. And are we really setting up the situation to make it happen by, you know, all of that is fine. I don't have a problem with that. What I guess I have the problem with is this whole idea that it's like, okay, why are we wondering if we can prevent it? We know that we can. It's just how hard it's going to be. Because we don't know the path there yet. So we as the audience know that there are changes, but they don't. And that's where some of the fun comes in. As I said, I don't have a problem with that. It's more along the lines of, though, is like, Barry, you should know by now. You already do know that you can change events. It's kind of infamously the first half of the season. This year is all about how you change timelines. You changed things. So I think that like the only thing that HR was saying that could be taken with like as differently, if he had just worded it perhaps differently, is to say, because it's separate timelines, she is going, you know, there is a timeline where she does die. You can't prevent that. That will happen in one, you know, one version of the timeline, but there are other versions that you can create, including changing our own one, because you don't know if the future you saw is the actual quote unquote future for this timeline. So that's the way that they've set up things in the show up to this point because of all the time travel that's happened. And for that matter, Legends of Tomorrow has been doing time travel. And that's how they've set it up.
Pay no attention to that.
But they're connected. You can't do that anymore.
But, you know, I think, well, they're giving us somewhat of what we asked for. We didn't want them going back, going to a time period and changing things anymore.
Right.
So they're coming up with a different way to, in a sense, do the same thing without using that same tool. So I sort of like this. I like this lining, just like they were showing the dominoes. I like them lining up things in their favor this time around instead of just Barry, you know, pulling the nuclear option, if you want to call it that.
Maybe the problem, I guess, is that – or not the problem, but I guess what I was felt was missing is that – so referred back to Flashpoint again. Not just in the opening, but literally you've gone through half a season saying, Barry, stop changing things. Barry, stop changing things. And now he's faced with a thing where he says, fine, I understand I should stop trying to change things. And he's given a reason to change things. And I wouldn't mind if they actually hit on that a few times to say, you know, him having to convince everyone else that this is a good idea. You know, get with another scene with him and Sisko sitting back and saying, hey, Sisko, yeah, you know what? We kind of came to terms over the fact that I didn't go back and save your brother. I'm going to change things to save Iris. You know?
And you're going to help me.
Yeah, and you're going to help. It's like, yeah, go there, please. I hope you do. Because then that makes sense of the whole Flashpoint thing happening in the first place. But they never really brought it up here. And that's where I think I was like, you guys have everything you need to make this a far more interesting conversation. That said, I will go back to the positive here. HR and his development, I think, has been amazing because there were so many people that hated him at first. And I think they're coming around. Like, I've talked to a few other people who have said, yeah, I'm actually starting to like this guy. It's like, yeah, and now they're going to do something horrible to him. You just know, because that's the way it works.
Yeah, what's he up to? I keep waiting for the shoe to drop, John. At least that, yeah, for me. I was like, okay, what's he going to do? He's going to do something. What's it going to be?
I think it's refreshing if they never actually have him do that, but they have everybody so worried because it's Wells that it's like, we can't trust you. Why? You're Wells. But I haven't done anything wrong.
Here, have a coffee.
I'm a blowhard. I'm a complete, you know, disaster in some cases, but it's like, I'm a decent person. I'm just trying to fit in here. And I love the fact that his whole museum idea actually was a pretty good one at the end of the day.
Well, not only that, but I imagine that's going to be the precursor to the Flash Museum one day. As is very common in comic books. So
it was in the paper, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, so, I mean, there's some good building blocks here, but this episode, for whatever reason, just really felt like it missed the mark. All right, that brings me to the third episode here at the bottom, and we won't talk too much about this one, but The Vampire Diaries, Season 8, Episode 9, The Simple Intimacy of the Near Touch. And come on, bring up. Stefan and Damon return to Mystic Falls at Sybil's request as she still searches for the historical artifact. Bonnie returns from Paris wearing a vial of Enzo's blood, which makes Caroline wonder if Bonnie will become a vampire. Stefan, Damon, Caroline, Bonnie, and Enzo attend the Mystic Falls pageant. Sybil taunts Damon with memories of Elena. Because, of course, that's how it works. I gave this a 7. It's a pretty average episode. It felt like what they're doing now, as they have just a handful of episodes left, they're doing what a lot of these shows do, which is they're now finding reasons to go back to things from the very beginning and kind of use them as a touchstone and remind the audience of remember when, and it's like, that's great, but I'm also being reminded that this series should have ended 2 seasons ago. So, probably not what you guys wanted me to remember, which is you really kind of kept this show going longer than it had to be. Even as fun as it is to watch, I still feel like they should have just passed the baton to the originals and been done with it. So that's it for the bottom three, and I'm just going to check the time real quick. And actually, what we can do here, as we are pretty far into this one, is wrap this one up right here. And what we'll do next time is we will talk about the top three, which I think we'll have a lot of good things to talk about, and then a few other episodes on the list for our third episode of the week. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.